Chapter 10. Governor Clemen L. Walker was furious when Ricardo Molinari dropped off the 25,000. They were huddled in the mansion's library, where the feds had hidden a bug every 10 feet. The bugs were hot. Downtown in a nondescript building, the hard drives were whirring and recording every word that was said. The governor sputtered and his face turned red. His fists clenched and unclenched. Then he managed to get out a few words. Hisses, really.
Some bitch stole my money.
Yeah, Johnny tried everything with the guy. Put the fear in him.
Oh?
Yeah, carved up Mr. Harrell's girlfriend. Nothing structural.
Yeah. What does that mean?
The governor's face paled.
How seriously did he injure her?
He carved Victor's name in her tits.
Damn. He what? Cut her up and turned her loose to call the cops on him and us?
Nah. She was sound asleep when it happened. Wouldn't wake up even if you engraved her tits.
Oh, hell.
Hey, Your Honor, you said we should put the fear in Victor Harrow. Consider it done.
Yes, and I also said nothing broken and nothing that shows.
Relax, this don't show.
Damn. Well, what's done is done. Now, what about the 75K he owes me? That's my money. He's holding out.
Swears he ain't got it.
Well, I've got the AG looking into that. He's got assets. We'll find them. Which reminds me, let me call Bob Amastagio and see where we are with that.
Governor Walker hit 9 on his iPhone. Speed dial had the Attorney General on the line in seconds. This time, a cell phone monitor sparked to life and recorded the conversation on the same hard drive downtown.
Hey, Clemen, what's up?
Robert F. Amastagio answered.
We got anything yet on that Victor Harrow down in orbit?
What do you mean? Have we found assets?
That's exactly what I mean.
There's a lawyer down there, name of Fletcher Franey. Fletcher is the chairman of the Hickman County Democrat Party. He's been through every public record in the county. Plus, he swiped a copy of our Mr. Harrow's tax returns last 5 years. Franey tells me there's nothing that doesn't have a huge lien. The guy's judgment-proof. We got nada.
Thanks.
The governor said, and clicked end call. He turned back to Bang Bang Molinari.
Nothing. We can't touch the guy.
But we made an example of him. That's our play, so word don't get out that he beat us.
I hate that.
Hey, you got another idea?
Does the guy have kids?
One daughter. Grown. Her husband owns a restaurant and package place. Small change.
Any equity there we can get to?
Guy's only had it 5 years. He's still paying interest on the notes, no equity.
Damn it all. What should we do?
Bang Bang Molinari spread his hands and looked firmly at the governor.
You got but one play. We take him out. Make an example.
Damn.
Just give me the word. We can make it look like the girl did it.
What girl?
The chick Johnny engraved. She has a motive to hurt Victor back.
I like that.
I knew you would.
All right. Get it done. Just don't report it back to me, yes?
Done.
Victor Harrow frowned at his lawyer and shook his head.
No. We don't turn over the name of the guy that did this. That gets me killed.
Bill Johansson III nodded.
Because the guy's connected.
Johansson was a bear of a man. Michigan law, first in class, and had once worked at Brown & Dorr in Chicago, an 800-lawyer firm, where he became a senior partner in the unheard-of record time of 34 months. Following that coup, he had cashed in his equity, taken his several million in cash and bonuses, and headed south to start his own firm, back in his hometown. A lifelong dream. But he still had the same insurance companies in his pocket that had loved him in Chicago. He did the defense work, civil and workers' comp, for no less than 22 carriers all over downstate Illinois. Against his better judgment, Johansson Hathaway had been allowed to grow to 8 lawyers when Bill had put down his foot.
No more, he said. If I can't review its files personally, then it can get me in trouble. I need more control. No bigger.
Clint Hathaway, his partner, could only agree. Bill held all the cards, and Clint was in the game only because he had been in the right office set up at the right time when Bill had come back to town looking for space and a partner. 8 lawyers, no more, no less. And Bill controlled them all with an iron fist.
So you're afraid to turn over this Johnny Bladani's name?
said Johansson.
I appreciate that.
Victor closed his eyes.
More than that, the guy's not only connected, he's the nephew of Richard Bang Bang Molinari.
And how do you know this?
I've been dealing with the guys since forever. I know all of them.
Bill Johansson III made a note on the legal pad that said Harrow in all caps across the top. Subject, related to Chicago, uncle, nephew. Johansson didn't use names. In case his files were ever subpoenaed or seized, the feds had a new habit of seizing the legal files of certain lawyers who defended bad guys. Among other things, Johansson was one who defended just the kind of bad guys the government was very interested in. He knew Bang Bang Molinari's name and knew what he did, but he didn't think he'd ever defended any of his middlemen or the lower echelon, button men and some drug mules. That was about the extent of his involvement with the Chicago mob. He smiled to himself. It could never be said he had a conflict of interest representing Vic Harrow in a case involving the Chicago mob. Would that be an ethical violation? He mused while he made his notes. Bill Johansson III was 55, played racquetball competitively on weekends, seniors, but still, and had been married to Gretchen Johansson for 35 years. He was loyal to his wife, he was loyal to his clients, and he was especially loyal to the insurance companies that were forever hiring him to defend their policyholders. And even, once or twice a year, the insurance company itself when it was sued for bad faith. It was said he had never lost a trial for an insurance client. It was also said he had never lost a criminal trial. 30 years ago, there had been a traffic violation and prosecution that he had lost, but that was chalked up to the fact his client hadn't bothered to show up for trial and the state trooper wouldn't give him the information he needed to admit certain photographs into the case. That one had come back guilty, and even now, 30 years later, he sometimes couldn't sleep thinking about that case. He prepared his cases with all the attention a surgeon gives a new procedure he must learn. He knew where to cut, where to dissect, where to sew, and when to close. Never once in his professional life had he gone to court with anything less than his own statements in detailed outline form and cross-examinations and direct examinations written out complete with expected witness responses beforehand. In short, nothing was going to happen in that courtroom that he hadn't anticipated and made full preparation to resist or encourage.
"Here's something I bet you didn't know," Bill Johansson said. "My little bird at the courthouse in orbit tells me that Fletcher Franey had been going over your public records."
Victor's heart thumped.
"Looking for what? Did they know?"
"Grantor guarantee indices? Looking at all your real estate transactions, UCC financing statements to see what trucks and equipment and tools you use, tax records to determine values of your assets based on their tax appraisal, everything on you there. Franey went through and made copies."
Who the hell would he be working for?"
Johansson shook his head.
"Unknown. That's what I wanted to ask you."
"No clue."
"Is he connected to Thaddeus Murphy?"
"Not that I know of. I've never seen them together."
"Would Franey be on the clock for Murphy?"
"Doubtful. Thaddeus Murphy doesn't have that kind of money he could afford to pay anyone. From what I hear, he's destitute, lives like a monk, doesn't drink or smoke, doesn't hang out with questionable women. Nothing we can use against him."
"Sounds like me at that age," Johansson laughed. "No exposure means no pressure points. Smart man."
"Suppose so. What if you were to call Franey, ask him what the hay?"
"Might work," Johansson said, a thoughtful look creasing his forehead. "We know some of the same people. Might use that. Of course, if he's working with Thaddeus, then it gets back. We're on to him."
"Oh, true. Damn. I don't like assholes prying into my private stuff."
Johansson laughed.
"Did I just hear you say private in a small town? Dream on."
"Dreamer." "True again. But I'll tell you one thing, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart."
"Which is what?"
"I didn't cut the girl. I'm crazy about Ermeline Ransom. I would never do that to her."
"Well, your insurance company has a reserve on this case of $300,000, just in case a jury disagrees."
"Could that happen? I wasn't even conscious. I was drugged, too."
"Anything can happen. It's an American courtroom with a jury of your so-called peers. Anything can happen.
except we're going to micromanage things so we lessen the odds of some of the negative things happening.
What are we going to do?
We're going to turn over the name of Johnny Bladani to Thaddeus. We've got a discovery document call, a request to admit facts. One of the things it asks us to admit or deny is that you, in fact, caused the injury to Ermeline. My strong suggestion to you, Victor, is that you allow me not only to deny that request, but also to name the actual cutter, Johnny Bladani.
I'm screwed.
I doubt that. You're high profile, Victor. Nobody is going to make an attempt on you. Hell, from what you tell me, you're judgment-proof. Everything's mortgaged. That being the case, it's my guess the mob has already forgotten about you. They've already moved on to their next victim.
Johansson knew he might be totally wrong about this, but he was being paid to talk with certitude, as if he had all the answers. That's how you earned $500 an hour.
Then you and I see it differently. I think they're coming after me.
They wouldn't dare. You're too high profile. Everyone would know.
The mob located Hector Ransom living on Burgundy Street in a flophouse in New Orleans. He had been working offshore for BP, helping that obnoxious institution continue to hide the billions of dollars of damage it had done to the Gulf of Mexico during the great oil spill of 2006. 3 years after the spill, tar balls could still be found on the Mississippi coast. In July 2013, the discovery of a 40,000-pound tar mat near East Grande Terre, Louisiana, prompted the closure of waters to commercial fishing. Hector Ransom had been busy at $125 an hour, working on a dredge around and through that horror story. While it was true BP paid extremely well for his services, Hector rarely saw any reason to send any part of that back home to his ex, Ermeline Ransom, for his son Jamie's child support. "You are needed back in orbit," the thugs told him. When he resisted, and he told them Hickman County had a warrant out for him, the men hurt him. As usual, the injuries were invisible to other citizens, but in reality he pissed blood for weeks after, and he was missing the second toe of his right foot. 3 days later, Hector was sitting in the lounge of the Sangamon Grill in Springfield, nursing a draft beer, waiting to meet someone he knew only as Johnny. He had been told the man would introduce himself, that he had Hector's picture on his cell phone. He should follow Johnny's orders exactly to the T, or they would be back. Next time, they told him, if they had to come back for him again, it would be the whole foot.